Started. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on our In Conversation with Call series. We appreciate you signing in. And I'm now going to turn it to Dean Tomaselli to get us started.
Thank you, Pam. And thanks to everybody joining us today for the next in our series of In Conversation regarding the Montefiore and Einstein response to COVID-19. It's a real pleasure for me to have Dr. Michelle Gong with us this morning, and I'll introduce her in just a minute. We are finally and earnestly looking beyond the pandemic with the recognition that this virus is going to be with us for a while, and we're going to have to adapt, but we are making some definitive plans for moving forward. To put in context, though, where we are compared to where we were, there are now 600 patients in the Montefiore Health System with COVID who are in the hospital. That's down from a peak of 2,000. The health system has treated over 11,000 patients in the hospital with this disease, has discharged over 9,000. And in the emergency room and other areas, ambulatory areas in our health system, we've seen over 80,000 patients with COVID, documented patients with COVID. So this represents 23% of the total number of cases in New York State. Not in the city, but in New York State. So it's truly remarkable what our health system has actually done. Again, we're hopefully at a different phase, and we are making definitive plans for the return, for example, of our students to clinical areas. We're making plans to welcome the next class, the class of 2024, returning our staff, our students, and faculty to campus in a physically distanced and appropriate fashion. We've really developed in record time the ability to do many of the things that we used to do face-to-face remotely and effectively. But I firmly believe that we cannot educate physicians and scientists completely remotely, so we will have to be present for lots of what we do. This is really happening in the context of the ongoing battle against COVID-19, and Dr. Gong will talk more about this, but Montefiore and Einstein have really been kind of leaders in many aspects of both patient care and understanding this virus. This week in my role as a deputy editor of one of the major journals, I saw a paper on the experience with the first 5,000 patients who've received convalescent plasma. Think about this. This protocol has been in place for maybe 3 weeks, and 5,000 people have already received this therapy. And the good news is it looks completely safe. We still don't have a good handle on efficacy yet. And at Montefiore and Einstein, Drs. Lizanne Porosky and Johanna Daly are leading the effort on this trial. We've also heard some good news about remdesivir, the antiviral drug that was developed by Gilead, and Dr. Barry Zingman at Montefiore is leading that clinical trial and the new clinical trial that combines remdesivir with another immunomodulatory drug to combat COVID. On the basic science side, I've mentioned to you that we've been developing improved serologic tests, and Kartik Chandran and John Lai have gotten an emergency use authorization from the FDA for their serologic test for the presence of exposure to the virus. And our guest today, Dr. Michelle Gong, has been leading in a trial of an immunotherapeutic drug, sarilumab, in patients who are the sickest of the sick patients with COVID-19. So I'm going to take the opportunity to introduce Dr. Gong now. She is our chief of the Division of Critical Care Medicine, chief of pulmonary medicine, and the director of critical care research in the Department of Medicine. She's a professor of medicine and a professor of epidemiology and population health. She not only has been a leading investigator, but she's also been leading the charge, and her team has cared for truly the sickest of the sick COVID-19 patients. Those are the patients who are being taken care of in an intensive care unit setting, even if it's not in a formal intensive care unit, because we've had to expand intensive care unit beds across the whole health system. She and her team, as well as her colleagues, will be highlighted tonight in a CBS News special at 9 o'clock entitled Bravery and Hope, 7 days on the Front Line, which was filmed in the Montefiore Health System. So without further ado, let me introduce Dr. Michelle Gong. Michelle?
Thank you, Dr. Tomaselli. It is a great pleasure for me to have a chance to actually speak with you today and to actually all the participants in this call. How would you like me to start, Dr. Tomaselli? Would you like me to go over what we have done first with regards to...
Yes, I think it would be good for the group to hear a little bit about how you've had to adapt, what you've had to face on the clinical side, what the opportunities have been kind of on the research side trying to combat COVID-19.
Certainly. So the COVID pandemic, it was an unprecedented worldwide phenomenon. And New York City actually was at the brunt of it for the United States. This is what many of us actually call a career singular event. Most of us have not lived through a pandemic of this size and this severity. So it required actually a great deal of challenge with regards to how we can rapidly, in the span of a few weeks, mobilize our entire medical system to meet the needs of all the patients coming. As chief of critical care, I was actually intimately involved with the hospital administration in terms of actually how we can prepare for the COVID pandemic. And we actually started this work even actually at the end in January, when we haven't had any cases in New York. But we understand from what was going on around the world what that might mean for New York and for Montefiore. So actually, when the first cases started to present in one of our Montefiore system, which was actually March 11th or so, we already had in place various plans for what to do if the patient starts coming in, including actually how we would mobilize the critical care division in terms of faculty to man the various ICU. What types of ICUs that we can expand to and increase our capacity? How much ventilators do we have? How will we protocolize the best and safest way for us to approach these patients, not only in terms of actually how to take care of them, but also actually in terms of how to protect the healthcare workers, who was going to be very much needed. And we know from actually what has happened in China, as well as Italy and France and Europe at that time, that these are precious resources that's going to be needed to fight the pandemic. In the span of actually 3 weeks, 4 weeks time, we increased our ICU bed capacity from approximately 106 ICU beds across the three campuses of Montefiore to actually our peak number of nearly 300 ICU beds, with our maximum occupancy somewhere around 280 patients in ICU. So we have almost tripled our ICU capacity. But even actually that underestimates the number of patients we were taking care of in the hospital. Because actually we were taking care of ventilated patients and critically ill patients even outside the intensive care units on the floors. The hospital itself had to increase capacity to an unprecedented level. Not only did we convert every unit in the hospitals of all three sites into either a med-surg bed or an ICU bed, we turned conference rooms, we turned auditoriums, we turned actually procedure units that we would normally be doing endoscopy in. We turned cath labs into ICUs. As you can imagine, that is a very large number of beds and a large number of patients for the critical care division to man. We started off actually in critical care with only a faculty of about 33 intensivists around in the system. In order to meet the needs of all these patients across the campuses, we mobilized every single one. As chief of pulmonary, I also mobilized all of the pulmonary physicians who also have critical care expertise. So we also actually pulled in any of the clinicians who may be more used to taking care of the very acutely ill patients. So So for example, some of our intensive care unit that was expanded to say the cath lab or the rapid access unit, those were manned by cardiologists because they know how to take care of shock and they know how to take care of these acutely ill patients. Some units were manned by the surgeons and some units actually were manned by the anesthesiologists. There was a period of time when we have run out of ICU beds and patients were being cared for in the operating room using ventilators that are normally reserved for operative patients. And the anesthesiologists were then taking care of these patients down in the operating room and in the post-anesthesia care unit. This was an unprecedented moment where everybody within Montefiore pulled in and did what we needed to do to meet the challenge and to take care of the patients. House staff, residents, they were all pulled in from all the various services to start taking care of the inpatients, the COVID patients in the hospital. Attending physicians from different specialties were also pulled in and served as the attending and the supervisors for patients on the floor, as well as actually in the ICU. Nurses were taxed to an incredible amount, and many of the nurses actually rose above and beyond what you can imagine. You know, resources come more than just beds. Resources also means expertise in taking care of these patients. Skills from the nurses for critical care patients have a different skill sets for nurses. Dialysis machine, ventilators, but also the personnel like respiratory therapists to be able to give the expertise on how to manage and set up the ventilators. All of those were taxed during this pandemic. And nurses were deployed to man some of these expanded ICUs. And some of them during times when there were a few of them who were actually out with COVID themselves would take care of the sickest patients that have ever taken care of, but they were also doing it at 2 to 3 times their normal patient load. Nevertheless, we soldiered on, nobody complained, and we did great saves with regard to these patients in COVID. We have been able to extubate many, and we have been able to send home many, many, many of these patients, even when they were very sick. during this entire time, we also recognized that we needed to better understand how to take care of these COVID patients. What these patients were coming in with was COVID pneumonia, and the most severely ill of these patients had what's called acute respiratory distress syndrome, or ARDS. Now, fortunately, Montefiore and Einstein happens to be actually one of the clinical centers selected by the National Institute of Health to be a clinical trial center to develop therapies to treat patients with ARDS. So my clinicians, my team, is already actually experts with regards to evidence-based care, as well as the best care, as well and research on how to take care of these ARDS patients. And because of that, we was able to lead some of the care that needs to be delivered to these patients. While actually we were in the middle of developing these pandemics, various members of Montefiore and Einstein, including myself, including Dr. Marla Keller and others in the ID department, was asked to actually spearhead clinical practice guidelines and expert panels to review the evidence and to be able to set forth what is the best care that we can give to these patients with COVID, both before and after they may develop respiratory failure. And these actually expert guidelines that we had developed and written in the middle of this pandemic became the guiding backbone for how COVID patients were treated around the country. As you heard from Dr. Tomaselli, we weren't just resigned to taking care of the patients clinically. We were actually also motivated and dedicated to advancing the science and the care and outcome of not only the patients that we're taking care of, but all future patients who are coming down with COVID. You heard a little bit about Dr. Zingman's work with the NIH in terms of the remdesivir trial and the convalescent plasma from Dr. Lisanne Porofsky. We have been actually one of the sites that's leading a multi-center clinical trial on using sarilumab to treat one of the things that you may have heard about, which is the cytokine storm in some of these patients with COVID. The patients that we see, some of them have a very intense and excessive inflammatory response to the COVID. And sometimes it's the inflammatory response and not even the COVID virus itself that's causing the damage to the body. We have just concluded actually the phase two aspect of the study in which they find that among those patients who are sicker, meaning they're either on mechanical ventilation or 100% oxygen, that there was a trend towards definitely improvement in terms of cytokine markers, as well as actually a trend towards improvement in outcomes. And we're right now embarked on the phase three part of this study. But that's not the only study that we have launched in critical care. As part of the NHLBI clinical trials network called PEDAL, which stands for the Prevention and Early Treatment of Acute Lung Injury in ARDS, we were uniquely positioned in New York, but also actually across these centers, these 12 centers across the United States, to rapidly launch trials to improve the outcomes of these COVID patients with ARDS. And one of the trials actually that we had launched is the ORCID trial, of which I'm a part of the actually protocol committee that developed this. And the ORCID trial, you may have heard, addressed the very question of hydroxychloroquine. At the very beginning of the pandemic, there was a lot of discussion about hydroxychloroquine. And as you know, there's been a lot of press about hydroxychloroquine. But as time went on, we came to realize that we do not have the data about whether or not it's effective or safe in patients. And as a result of that, actually, we're one of the centers and networks that's leading this trial to give a definitive answer to that. We're also in the midst of actually launching multiple platform trials, which is an adaptive trials, which are actually trials that are set up to be able to rapidly test interventions that may bring improved outcomes to these patients. And it is an innovative trial design that is ripe for a pandemic because they have to be very nimble. You can launch trials very quickly, one after the other. You can adapt them because there's so much that we don't know about COVID. We can use Bayesian statistics to start adapting these trials to actually what we see rather than what we think we see. And that gives us actually not only a chance to more rapidly find treatments that can be helped in patients with COVID, but it also actually gives the best chance for patients enrolled into these trials to be randomized to an intervention that will be most likely to be beneficial. These are actually groundbreaking trial designs that we have adopted across the country with regards to how to treat these COVID patients. And as you know, Professor of Population Health and Epidemiology, I'm still also very interested in the epidemiology of COVID. So in addition, we are actually participating in a trial with the Center for Disease Control, where we're actually looking at healthcare workers and their exposure to COVID, the likelihood of the antibody being positive, and actually with relationship to how much clinical time they do, to give us actually a better understanding, not only of how COVID spreads, but how we may be able to better protect healthcare workers who are going to be needed on the front line of every pandemic that might come. So the last, and I'm losing track of time now, but I think it's like the last 90 days or so since this has started, has been a bit of a blur. We have been tested and challenged, and we have provided care to more patients than has ever been hospitalized within the Monte system. We're coming around to the other side of, you know, the what they call the hill in terms of numbers, and we're seeing decreasing number of patients now. But even in the midst of the busiest time of the pandemic, the academic endeavor at Montefiore and at Einstein, the desire to actually be able to not just take care of the patient at the bedside of when we see them, but to also do research so that we can benefit all future patients and the next patient that comes out. That's never stopped. And that continued in spite of actually all of the clinical responsibility and all of the pandemic needs that went on. And that is just one example of actually how Einstein and his partnership with Montefiore provides actually a unique opportunity where we can marry clinical care as well as research to not only take care of the patients and to be able to do the best that we can at this moment in time, but with an eye towards how we can improve the care that we deliver to our patients even in the future and to lead the field in how it's done.
Dr. Gong, that was terrific. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for all the work that you've done on behalf of our patients and on behalf of everybody in the Montefiore Einstein Health System. There were a couple of questions that perhaps you could address. You covered some of them, but maybe from your perspective as a leader in the front line and perhaps kind of and the national leadership that you have in the PEDAL Network and others, what is your perspective on what the best therapies or therapeutic approaches, unless and until we have a virus, are going to be for COVID as we move forward?
Yeah, that is the $1,000 question, if you will. So I think actually the COVID pandemic requires therapy that's multimodality. And it also requires a bit of a personalized medicine approach. Now, what do I mean by that? Right? A lot of times we have this feeling that if somebody has an infection, you give them antibiotics and then they'll get better. I don't think that that's purely going to be the case in COVID. And we knew that this was the truth, even as we were doing research within sepsis and within ARDS. What we think we're seeing in COVID, and what I think actually will happen going forward, is the better understanding of actually how to phenotype these patients with COVID. Some of them are going to come in, and their organ damage and their illness is caused by the COVID virus itself, the viral replication, as well as actually the damage that's caused from the viral replication. And in some of these patients, there may not be an adequate inflammatory response to conquer that virus. For this types of patients, we may be needing to have a therapy that is more targeted towards viral replication, boosting the immune system, especially actually the T-cell immunities, to be able to counteract the damage caused by the viral replication. On the other hand, there probably are other patients in which they have the virus infection, they have an inflammatory immune response against the infection, and they are probably matching that there is a balance between the viremia, the viral replication, and the body's immune response to it, and they may get better. And many of the patients with COVID do get better, okay, on their own without anything other than supportive therapy. So those patients may or may not benefit from certain therapies. But we also are seeing patients, and we're seeing this now in reports that you may have heard in the news from children, that one of the reactions against the COVID virus is an excessive inflammatory response. So that maybe they had a virus to begin with, or they still have a viral replication, but that the body's inflammatory response to the infection is out of proportion, and now it is the inflammatory response that is causing the damage that we see. So what I see for the future of treatment in terms of COVID are these multimodalities. there will be drugs that are aiming at viral replication, and remdesivir is one of them. But there also will be drugs that are aimed at dampening the inflammatory response, and sarilumab is one of them. And that is also not just the only ones that we have investigations. There's also actually lots of investigations with regards to things like interferon B, with regards to other monoclonal antibodies against actually the spikes within the coronavirus, as well as actually monoclonal antibodies against CD14, IL-1RA, and other cytokines in the system. And there will be interventions that aim at trying to prevent the complications that we're seeing in COVID, such as how best to provide anticoagulation as prophylaxis against clots. How best do we actually manage these patients on a ventilator? How best to be able to guard against and treat secondary bacterial infections? So what I see going forward is a multimodality approach towards the treatment of COVID, but I also see actually a movement towards more personalized medicine, where we try to phenotype these patients to see where they are in the course of COVID infection. Is it predominated more by viral replication and damage, or is it predominated more by inflammation and excessive immune response? And that we can then better target the therapy to meet the pathology that is occurring in the patient.
Well, that's great. They're targeting both factors that the virus carries with it and the patient's response, whether it needs to, the immune system needs to be up or down regulated in response to an infection.
Exactly.
One other question. Are you seeing and do you worry about the sequelae of patients who've been infected, who've recovered, and how now have residual organ damage of some sort that that requires ongoing medical therapy after, you know, after their viral infection? And what types of things have you seen and are you worried about, or are you worried about any of them?
So the short answer is yes, I am worried about it. Okay. So in the pre-COVID days, my research career has been centered on ARDS. So actually, we were very well prepared with regards to the pandemic, with regards to the research on what is the best treatment. But the other thing actually that we were investigating, and this is led by one of my faculty members, Dr. Aluka Hope, is the long-term outcomes of survivors with respiratory failure. We are recognizing even before the pandemic that patients, even after they survive and go leave the hospital after a stay in the ICU or after some time on a ventilator, many of them develop long-time sequelae. Their lungs may actually get better, but they will have problems in terms of thinking, cognitive deficits. They will have problems in terms of weakness. They will lose actually some degree of function of daily activity that they had prior to their illness. We anticipate, because COVID is not anything special in the sense of like things that we have never seen before, but COVID presents with many, many more patients and in much more severe respiratory problems. So we fully anticipate actually that even among the patients in which we have helped survive their COVID pneumonia and their ARDS, that some of them will still see actually some of these sequelae. Now, how many and what do we do about it? So we're actually, as part of the PEDAL network, embarking on some long-term follow-up studies on these patients with COVID to see if they develop the same degree of impairment and function and cognitive dysfunction that we have seen with other patients of ARDS. Is it worse or is it similar? In addition, actually, Dr. Aluka Hope and I hope to be able to create a long-term outcome clinic or a post-COVID center to be able to better address the multidisciplinary needs of some of these survivors with COVID. we're hearing among some of these children that they may have an inflammatory response sometime after their COVID infections. And we know actually in COVID, unlike actually previous pneumonia, where you tend to get very sick upfront, some of these patients will get sick 5 or 7 days into their illness. So we still don't really know what the course is of the recovery of these patients. And it is actually one of our moral imperatives, after taking care of all of these patients, to actually start developing plan for taking care of these patients, but also actually developing a research program to better understand how we can help these patients.
So Dr. Gong, thank you. It's very clear to me that this virus is going to be with us for a while, and the sequelae of the virus actually having passed through this our population is going to be with us for a while. Thank you for your leadership, not only in taking care of the patients when they're acutely ill, but trying to understand how best to manage and prevent infection and to take care of patients who might have sequelae of being infected with COVID-19. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. I want to thank you for your continued support of our clinical and research efforts around COVID-19. And let me remind you about the program tonight on CBS at 9 p.m. Again, that the program is entitled, let me get the title right, Bravery and Hope, 7 Days on the Front Line. And let me remind you that next week we'll be speaking with Dr. Michael Cabana, Physician in Chief of the Children's Hospital at Montefiore, in our next in-series conversations. Thank you, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.